This podcast is brought to you by the Specialty Produce Network.
Welcome to Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. We are so glad you're here to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families. So sit back, relax, connect, and enjoy. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Conscious Living Live Podcast. I'm here today with Tara Wassell, chiropractor at Ocean Wellness. Welcome, Tara.
Hi, thanks for having me again. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's so exciting to be here with you. Today, we wanted to announce together, it's Sensory Awareness Month.
Yep, for the whole month of October. So it's a good time, a good opportunity to share lots of information for people out there that might need to hear it. And so that's, I think, our main goal for today.
Absolutely, is we want to share what that means, sensory awareness, and really focusing on what sensory processing means.
Well, so I guess the best place to start is talk about what it involves. So sensory processing is when information comes in from our environment, we have to bring that in and then process that. And then once we have that information in our brain has to decide what kind of reaction to have. Or right. That can be like an emotional reaction or a motor response. And any time that any of those steps aren't working really well, you're going to have a sensory processing disorder.
That's correct.
And yeah. So it can be different, obviously, because it can be a problem with different parts of that process, but also because we have so many senses.
That's correct. We sure do. We even have more senses than we think about, but some of the main senses like hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and feeling can be somewhat overwhelming for highly sensitive kids.
Yeah, and the other thing is on top of those senses, we have the three that I focus on, which you have to talk a little bit on some of your other ones.
Yeah.
But vestibular system, which is kind of our equilibrium and our balance.
That's correct.
And then our proprioception, which is where we are in space. It's like feeling our body and being aware of where it is. And then we also have what's called interoception. And that's our body being able to feel what's going on inside of it. Are we hot? Are we cold? Do we need to use the bathroom? All of that
our visceral reception.
So, some people actually don't have a good sense of that, so they actually have trouble with just basic functions. And that one I don't think is as much of a focus for what we're kind of going over today.
Right. Exactly.
And when I think about it, the vestibular system is one of the most important ones for sensory processing disorders. And the reason I say that is because the vestibular system, he's kind of like, I don't know why it's a he, I just said that, but he's kind of the boss. And he tells the other guys, you know, how much information they can let in, how loud that information can be. He kind of organizes it and keeps everything going. So it's kind of like, you know, the composer leading everyone through.
Okay, leading all the other senses through. Yeah. And so when that one's distorted or imbalanced, that one then can distort or create unbalance or imbalance in all the other areas.
Yeah, because if that system's not running well, if you have dysfunction in the vestibular system, even if the other ones don't have big issues, the perception of them coming in can be screwy because maybe the volume's turned up too loud or down too low.
Right.
And so, for example, with proprioception, it's actually considered a very calming sense. Because it's where you are and it's kind of centering.
Right.
Okay. And so when kids or when people can't feel where their body is, it's not a really good feeling.
Right.
Right. And so if that one's turned down too low, if proprioception is turned down too low, that also amplifies the noise from the other systems.
I see. So you can create a lot of imbalance in the different systems. But then if you go back to the vestibular system and balance that, the opportunity for the others to balance improves.
Exactly.
I see. Thank you.
And the vestibular system has a lot of parts, and it's like your inner ear, you know, the part for your balance, your upper cervical spine. It's tied in with your vision. So it's very integrated into your body and all of those different functions that affect your other senses.
Not just your cerebellar activity.
Exactly.
I see. So our sense of balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. That's fantastic. So tell me a little bit about what you see in children with some of these imbalances.
Okay. We'll just kind of go through sense by sense and then interrupt me or kind of
Absolutely.
Direct me if I'm going off on a tangent.
No, we can do that.
So, like I said, vestibular is kind of the head honcho, so I always look at that. And that one can be kind of emotional instability, not able to self-regulate, because it's not balanced and there's not a good control of the volume of all the information. That can be very stressful. And then if we go back to our basic five senses that most people think about, if a child has a problem with, say, olfaction or smelling, those kids are really sensitive to things that wouldn't bother most people. So if the classroom was cleaned with chemicals, it might be really bothersome to them. Or if their teacher's wearing a strong perfume or a lotion, that might really, really be too much for them. Kind of like pregnancy nose when everything's amplified.
Yeah.
But all the time. Or maybe they can't sit near the trash because the smell coming from the trash is so distracting to them. Then we have maybe auditory issues. And so to those kids, they might hear every little sound. So they might hear people rustling their papers, clicking their pencil, the clock ticking, the air conditioner turning on and off. All things that we should be able to kind of zone out as background noise, they're hearing all of that and they have to process it as if we process what isn't background noise.
Yeah.
And so because of that information taking up all of their, you know, brain power, I guess, then the other information on top of that becomes very overstimulating.
Wow.
So next system.
Yeah.
Maybe tactile, so touching. That one might look more like the kid. They can be either hyper or hypo. So they might be like in their own bubble and they don't want anyone to touch them. And they might really not react well to that. And so other kids that don't understand that, kind of getting in their space can really upset them. They might have trouble with their tag on their shirt, or they might also be the other direction and be the kid that wants to touch everyone and touch everything and be in everyone's face. And people, you know, think they're being rude, but they are just trying to get the information in, and so they want to touch.
Yeah. That's awesome. What are some of the other things that we see?
Well, the other thing I should say about, so visual processing disorders are very problematic in a classroom setting.
Yes, they are.
They're one of the most prevalent, and about 70% of what we learn in the classroom has to be processed through the visual system.
Yes.
So if there's problems there, then we're really going to struggle. We'll see these kids kind of, they can burn out during the day. The day goes on and it's just too much. And so they can't take any more input. So they kind of shut off and put their wall up.
Right.
Or they get too stressed out and then they start acting out, you know, and then people think they're misbehaving, but really they're just taxed out from all the stimulation.
Yes.
And one of the things with that is your convergence and divergence. So your eyes working together, side to side, and coming, bringing your visual field closer and farther apart. As you can imagine, so if they're working from the board to their paper, and that's not working well, they're getting all kinds of extra information coming into their brain that they're like, what the heck? This is too much. I don't want to do it. So they might not do well with copying from the board, things like that. And there's really cool little tricks you can do. You can find out which side of their brain is calming for them, and there's different colors for different sides of the brain. So you can use your subject dividers over top of their paper when they're reading, so that it's calming to their brain, so that the visual input that's overstimulating is also being balanced by the calming effect of the color. You can do that for the copying from the board as well. But there's a lot of different little tricks. I'm trying to think what else we kind of skipped over. The kids with vestibular and proprioceptive issues, they might do well, if they need a lot of stimulation, they might do well with like a weighted vest.
Yes.
A weighted blanket, a weighted toy, anything that they can feel that helps them have a sense of where they are in space.
Right. It helps them compress some of their joints
mm-hmm.
to engage those proprioceptive areas.
And me personally, I was always one of those proprioceptive kids, so I didn't have very good proprioceptive input. And so I'm up and down in my seat, I'm sitting on this foot and sitting on that foot and kicking my feet back and forth and maybe
right.
kicking the kid in front of me, not to be annoying, but, you know, because I want to feel my body.
Right.
So all that extra movement and tapping my leg
right.
and things like that are really distracting to the other kids.
Right.
But they would help me feel calm.
Right.
And so that's just one example of how that can look.
Absolutely. Well, I've also seen in proprioception and in the energy healing work that I do, it's amazing. These proprioceptors we have in many areas, but I find them, the bigger ones, in the middle of our feet and our hands, in our large joints like our ankles, wrists, knees, elbows, shoulders, hips, and even the jaw joint, right, the TMJ joint. And we even have levels of proprioception in our eyes and our ears in those areas.
And of course, me as a chiropractor, I love how many there are because we have them in every joint. And so when I'm working on someone's spine,
yes.
they have joints on each side as well as the joints to the ribs going up their, you know, their mid-spine in the thoracic region.
Exactly.
And there's just a ton of joints with tons of proprioceptors that we can stimulate to help
right.
that input.
Help breathing, circulation, all kinds of even on those levels. And on those larger joints, I found energetically that on the first level, that's right, we get that sensory input about moving through time and space. So we learn how to move our body in a way that we'd like to hit the baseball bat or swing the tennis racket or run or do different things. But a lot of times where I find the shutdown is in on the secondary level, is we experience emotions this way. We feel emotions physically in our body through these proprioceptors. On a secondary level, and sometimes when we're highly sensitive and we're not sure how to regulate, process, and understand how to work with those emotions, they can feel overwhelming. And so we end up shutting down as a coping mechanism those proprioceptors, and then we feel less in our body. And those, when I find when the kids come in that they're clumsy
yes.
or they're walking into walls or they can't do athletics, or they can't run or do those things. And a lot of times I'll look to see if there's a mental or emotional aspect that might be always shutting this system down, and then they don't feel as connected to their bodies. And the third level that I really understood about proprioceptors is our connection, our energetic connection to the world. So our connection to each other, our through feelings, through thoughts, through energies even, and even our connection to plants and animals and the earth and the sun and all everything in nature as well. We feel less connected to everyone and everything when these proprioceptors get turned off or get slowed down or shut off due to overwhelm.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, because if you can't even feel your own body and where you are in space, it has to be so much harder to connect with the next person or the other things in your environment.
It's super hard. And then they feel kind of lost, not only lost in space in the sense is they don't know how, like those that walk into the walls or walk with difficulty or can't run or move their body. But yeah, they feel less connected to each other. They may tend, which then feeds another emotional aspect, which is feeling lonely or feeling disconnected or feeling, which is really important in school for a lot of times, is we want to feel like we belong and that we're part of this greater community.
Absolutely.
And a lot of these kids feel that they don't belong and that they're disconnected and people aren't really sure how to support them in feeling more connected.
Well, another thing to keep in mind is that almost 100% of the time, if a child or person has issues with one of their sensory systems, they're going to have issues with multiple systems.
Yes.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be across the board, you know, all guys are down.
Right.
But there might be two or three or four that need to have some help. And so I think one thing that we should talk about today
yeah.
is, like, how does this happen?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Because people that maybe need to hear this information aren't that familiar with that part of it.
Right, exactly.
So
how did this happen?
One thing that can happen is can have to do with fetal development and the birth process. Mm-hmm. So anything like toxicity exposure in utero, a mom with a super stressful pregnancy or that gets like a car accident during pregnancy, anything that kind of can be perceived as a stressful environment to the fetus can be one cause. C-section can be a cause. A regular birth, but with interventions such as forceps or vacuums, that can be a cause.
Right.
And even just lots of pulling.
Yeah.
So any kind of even minor trauma during the birthing process can be one cause.
Right.
And then another area is going to be trouble with the signals as they pass from the brain into the body and the body into the brain.
Right.
And so that kind of is a whole nother can of worms because that can be, you know, in my world, the chiropractic side, the information is getting blocked as it's passing through the spinal cord and into the brain.
Up to the brain. Mm-hmm. And then or back down.
Right. So that's spinal subluxations, muscle issues, any kind of impingement on the actual physical structures that the information has to go through.
Right.
But it can also be emotional or energy blockages, which I think you can talk more on than I can.
Yeah. I mean, I experience energy blockages from all different aspects, and many of them I look into four categories. That would be physical, like you talked about. That can be emotional. Emotions, it's amazing when we feel incapable of knowing how to work, especially with the uncomfortable ones, anger, fear, frustration, overwhelm. When we don't know how to work with those, a lot of times we hit the fuse switch and we go, can't do it, turn off. And a lot of times when we're turning off or disassociating or choosing not to or walking away, whatever it is that we're doing, a lot of times we don't recognize that we're actually turning off our nervous system. And it's creating blockages, real physical blockages in the body. We have mental issues. A lot of those I look at as beliefs. Like, what do we believe about our body? My body can't do this or can't do this. And we send those signals out to our nervous system, and our body actually intelligently listens.
Yeah, because our body actually has physiological responses to our thoughts and our feelings.
It sure does.
And we also store our emotions in our muscles. So sometimes doing chiropractic work on people, you'll get what you call an emotional release. And all of a sudden, you know, they're very emotional and they're not sure why.
Yeah.
It's like, it's okay. You know, this happens.
It's just buried in the body because we didn't know how to work with it. And so we accidentally or unconsciously suppress those emotions because in the moment we may not know what to do with them. And so that's where I work with a lot of people, too, and helping them sort for and understand how to work with emotions and how they actually physically interact with the body. And then there's other aspects. There's energetic aspects, like how we can have energy blockages because, I don't know, a parent or a teacher or a friend is constantly on us or wanting us to do something. And when that happens, so that's an energetic entanglement that we talk about. There can be spiritual issues, too, on lots of different levels that impact energy blockages through the physical body.
Well, what about, you know, I work with a lot of people on nutrition.
Yeah.
And so that can be like a chemical blockage.
Absolutely.
Because there can be bad stuff in the food or too much of an imbalance of what we're eating.
Right.
And I don't know if you work in this realm, but, you know, a lot of people talk about the different vibrations for different kinds of food.
Absolutely.
So if you're eating a lot of the low vibration stuff, that's not going to help you out too much.
It doesn't help you out. And that low vibration food are just foods that are made not well, made quickly, maybe made with not the best ingredients in them because they're inexpensive or mass produced. They might be, and we even look at it, when I see highly sensitive kids, they're sensitive to these things. I actually had a child come in and he went to a taco shop and got a burrito. He got food poisoning from the burrito, but it really wasn't a pathogen. The food poisoning was an energetic pass from the person who was behind the counter. I don't know. He broke up with his girlfriend and felt rejected. And that sense of rejection, that emotion actually passed into the food. The little boy who was six ate the food, it had that essence of rejection inside of it, and he felt poison from it and threw it up and all that sort of stuff. But it was amazing to find that very sensitive people to energies, including emotional energies, can be affected even negatively in that way.
I never even thought about that.
Isn't that amazing?
Far into the details of it. I was thinking more, you know, is it a clean food? Is it a healthy food?
Right.
You know, is it an alive food?
Right.
It's amazing to see what happens when you kind of remove some of the junk and get people eating healthy, clean, organic food.
Right.
How many symptoms they have that just start to go away on their own.
Right.
And then they realize the light goes on and they're like, oh my gosh, this is all I needed to do. And then you can really make a lot of progress really quickly.
Absolutely.
So that's one thing that I definitely like to look at. And then going back to what we were talking about, the causes of mm-hmm. sensory processing disorders.
Yeah.
There's also, so we did the fetal right. and birth traumas,
right.
the physical blockages, and then there can be kind of faulty or incomplete development of those neural pathways that carry the information.
Right.
So maybe that should have been number two right after birth, because those happen from things like not having enough tummy time.
Right.
Keeping the primitive reflexes that we want them as that we want integrated during the first year of life, if those stick around, it blocks right. some of those pathways in the sensory systems
right.
and the postural reflexes that we want to have. And anything along those lines that goes wrong when we're developing, it's going to make a less strong connection for that information to pass down.
Right.
So even if we don't have, if we have a clean diet and we have no subluxations in our spine and our energy's great, we can have weak connections.
Right.
And so only some of the signal's getting down. So we have to look at all the different causes and what can be going on. And then from there, figure out what the best plan of making improvements is.
That's correct.
So
absolutely.
I know one thing that you do a lot, you have your sensory integration
yes.
work. So do you want to touch on that?
Sure, I'd love to. What I do is focus on where those blockages might be and what would be the root causes of them, very similar to what you're doing as well. And so we look at it from different viewpoints, which is so amazing and collaborative, because we can then see different avenues of how to develop those treatment plans. And so what I notice when somebody is sensory, usually it's sensory overwhelm. And sometimes I see lower toned people and they're sensory underwhelmed. And so a lot of times that is because they really have experienced a sense of overwhelm somewhere in their earlier time. And then they're in this always kind of shut down mode. And I find that pretty common. But I find people more in sensory overwhelm. And so we look at ways in which to help determine, first of all, where the sensory overwhelm is coming from. And you're right, most everybody has a sense of vestibular disruptions and looking at where those are and then working on different age groups, what those might be as far as helping that come back online. But then also looking at some of the sensory overwhelm, a lot of what the kids are experiencing isn't necessarily all physical. A lot of it's energetic. They're experiencing it because they can hear things a little more than other kids. So they hear high tones or low tones. I've got some kids and some adults who can hear conversations up the street.
That has to be distracting.
Yes, it's very distracting. And so I call that extrasensory hyperacousia or different situations. I had one chiropractor that could hear the sun crackle. And I said, so you're hearing gamma waves. So why are you hearing gamma waves? What's important? What I realized with her is so they have these extrasensory somewhat gifts, as you'd call that. And so I said, why do you hear the sun crackle? Well, she's a chiropractor, so she can actually hear the frequencies of discordances in the body. And as her primary assessment tool on how to determine where those problems are. And but she just still didn't like the sun crackling. So we were working on ways in which that can be reduced in such a way so that it isn't so overwhelming. Many of the kids, for example, like you said, in the visual disturbances area, so kids that can see the energies of life around them get a little overwhelmed by the classroom setting. They can see colors around people or around animals or around plants, and they They're like, what is that? What does that mean? And a lot of times those colors are related to awarenesses or emotions. And they don't really understand how it changes and shifts and what does that mean. Many of the kids with visual disturbances have a hard time looking at a two-dimensional paper that's black and white. They see things like rivers running down between the words. They may see the center of the page really focused, but the rest of the words blurred. Lots of different ways. And so you're right. They can, for visual support, they can use colored screens or colored eyeglasses through a vision therapist that can help with that so that those words look more easy to focus on and understand.
Right. And another thing that you see with kids with visual processing disorders, to them, when they look at something that we see very crisply and it's easy to understand, it might look like a picture that's taken through a shaky hand, you know, camera where someone's moving. So it's a little bit blurred, the edges aren't quite crisp, and they're not exactly sure. And if you kind of think about looking at a blurred picture that's kind of shaky versus a crisp picture, it takes a little bit more time and a little bit more effort to figure out what you're looking at and, you know, go on to the next step.
And that's a lot of energy consumption, a brain energy, which uses glucose and simple fats and other things to have that energy. And then their energy levels get depleted a little bit sooner than maybe another child who's not having those difficulties.
Yeah. And you were talking about sensory overwhelm.
Yeah.
One of the terms that I talk to parents about when they have a sensory kid is that these kids can have what's called sensory defensiveness.
Yes.
And so it's kind of that burnout or the hyper, you know, vigilance, like get away, back up, out of my bubble. Yeah. They might really start acting out in school or showing signs of aggression and anger. And really, it's just that they're overwhelmed by what they're processing in their sensory world, and they're trying to have some kind of control on that level of stress.
That's correct.
So they're like, this is all I can take, and I don't want any more.
That's right.
There's the line. Don't cross it. So that's sensory defensiveness.
Right, right. So what we do is help them also explore their sensory overwhelm and then help them develop ideas or processes in their daily life so that they can then expand and understand and feel more confident with that sensory piece. So I help them look at ways in which they can I'm thinking of an idea of ways that they can support that and feel more confident within their own skill base.
That makes sense to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, so when I'm working with these kids, you know, I'm looking at, do they have retained reflexes, the primitive reflexes that we want to get rid of? And then if they do, we start working, chipping away at those. We talked more about that last time.
Right.
Then I look at, are their postural reflexes there? Are they strong?
Yeah.
If not, let's do some exercises for that. Let's stimulate those areas so that they can develop.
Right.
And then there's actually all kinds of exercises that are specific to different systems that you can do for these kids. And so it varies completely depending on what systems are down or what systems are overactive. If there's a lot of overactive, you know, things, then we want to get that vestibular system going. We can do some things to calm them using proprioception. Some kids that are highly sensitive, before I can even do hands-on work, we might have to do some deep compression to stimulate the proprioceptors just so that they can relax and feel like, okay, it's okay if you touch me and make me move my head and all this stuff I don't like. Because sometimes if your vestibular system's off, you don't even want to turn your head and, you know, your neck.
Right.
Because it's a lot of stimulation for you.
Right. Well, and it's really true. So when I have kids like that, for example, and we may recognize that it was the emotions maybe that cut that off or made that system go down, what I'll have them do is work with that emotion trigger. So let's say their emotion trigger is fear. So whenever they're feeling fear, you can say, okay, well, look, I'm fearful about that. That's okay. And we work through that process. But then what they recognize is secondarily that response was they turned off their proprioceptors. And they want to, and so I teach them how to turn that back on and letting it be okay to feel that fear and then to move through it.
And I like that.
I know, isn't it cool?
Yeah.
And then they can turn it back on and go back and play tetherball or baseball.
That's really empowering for them. because it's not saying when you're having this problem, you need me to fix you.
That's
you're saying when you're having this problem, here's how you can look at it. Here's the thoughts you need to have, and here's how you can improve the problem you're having on your own.
Right.
And I'll be here to help you when you're not sure how that looks.
Exactly. And then what that does is build their confidence, and then they won't think that their body's against them, or that their body is bad, or that they don't like their body, or all the other different body thoughts that they may have and develop over the years. And then when they become adults, they're like, why do I hate my body? I don't get it. It's because of all those other earlier instances in childhood that had developed that belief pattern.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I love the way you think about things, because I look at things like very scientifically, physiologically, and I'm open to all of that, but it's not my line of thought.
Right.
And so then when we collaborate on, you know, working with patients or talking through different treatment strategies, I love hearing the energetic side and the emotional side, because that's not where my brain goes.
Well, and it's so neat to recognize it, because when we notice that, what happens then is then they don't have to stay with the therapies forever.
Mm-hmm.
And both you and I don't want to see that.
No.
You know, where they have to keep walking a certain way, or putting their legs up against the wall, or turning their head. You know, we want to help them go through the process to open that up and then reformat that whole being process of them. So that's physical, mental, emotional, and or spiritual, or energetic, and of what those primary causes were. And then they get that whole health healing. And they take this with these understandings with them for the rest of their lives about how to look at things. Oh, that went wrong, or I get headaches now. So what are the headaches related to? You know, it's not just muscle tension, or it's not just a poor night's sleep or not enough hydration. It could be, oh, what was I thinking about? Where was my stress coming from? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of what I like about my side of the work is getting down to those root causes,
right?
Helping them break those connections, reform new connections, and strengthen those, so that they don't have to go through life constantly with compensations that they're not even aware of, that take extra time and energy and aren't as efficient as the way we were designed to work.
Right.
And so by kind of getting them to that level, they can really reach their full potential.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing that why I love that we're talking about this is because what happens to a lot of kids with sensory processing disorders or other neurodevelopmental disorders is they end up very medicated a lot of times,
right?
Because they may be aggressive, they can't sit still, they can't focus, whatever it is, they're taking different things, and then maybe there's side effects to those medications, and they're taking medications for the side effects from the other ones,
right?
And none of it is meant to do anything but help them, but it's not really getting to why they're having the problem,
right?
And then dealing with that,
right?
And so I have a vision where we can help these kids get past their struggles without having to medicate them, and give them the tools for their body to work the way it's designed to, so that they can really express their self and feel comfortable with their self and thrive out there in the world, whether it's socially or academically, or just, you know, day-to-day, everyday stuff.
Right.
Because if you can't even... if you're a kid that's so overstimulated or overwhelmed by your input that you don't even want to go to the playground, you're missing out so much.
Right.
And I want those kids to have like their full experience and not be judged and not be medicated. And I want the parents to feel empowered that they can do these things for their kids.
Right.
That really will get them well and working more efficiently without any side effects.
Right.
Have you ever had any negative side effects of working on energy?
Never had any.
Right.
Never had any.
I mean, sometimes when I'm working on different systems, it can be very overwhelming and they kind of burn out or shut down.
Right.
But there's not any long-term consequences to that. It's just they've had enough for that day, and that's as far as we can get until the next time.
Right. And because they need sometimes to integrate a lot of the new informations, the new neural pathways that you're creating and opening and allowing the flow of neurological or electrical energy to go through the nervous system.
And I love using chiropractic as a tool for that reason, because I can target certain parts of the spine. So if we're doing vestibular work, definitely want to look at the upper cervical or maybe do some craniosacral therapy. If they're very overwhelmed, stressed, fight or flight, we want to stay away from some of those sympathetic parts of the spine.
Right.
And focus on the upper cervicals and then the sacral area and kind of calm that down.
Right.
And so just going by their symptoms, how they're feeling every day and what systems we're working on, if you're very specific about the adjustment you apply,
yeah,
you really help them to rewire and to integrate that information and kind of work it into their being.
Absolutely. And, you know, talking about sensory awareness and helping it, I know that many parents of children that have sensory needs, whether that's from processing disorders or neurological deficits or problems, or even just kids that are very typical but are atypical in certain areas, and you know it's a sensory processing. A lot of times there's not a lot of information out there just yet. I think we're growing that through Sensory Awareness Month. But also of how they can implement the help in de-stressing these overwhelmed kids at home and also then advocating for them in schools and other environments that they're in. So, for example, a child who has auditory processing probably is not a great idea to go get them in a basketball game, for example, right off the bat because of the yelling and screaming during the basketball and a lot of
whistles
people.
Whistles and all the different sounds.
Yeah, and a coach yelling at them and things like that. So they need a calmer environment. So maybe a piano lesson where it's one-on-one, where there's no other external distractions. Maybe sailing or maybe other kinds of things that are a little bit quieter so that they can be comfortable, turn on that vestibular system, be more comfortable and confident in their body, then gradually move them up to those more, auditorily exciting times to help challenge them and learn those skills in those other environments that we may consider, you know, typical for everyone else to experience. Other people with kinesthetic issues, you wouldn't want to necessarily overwhelm them in a
trampoline park.
A trampoline park or like, flag football where everybody piles on each other or things like that because they may feel a sensory overwhelm from that frequent of touch. So when you know what your child's sensory triggers are, and when you know when it, and then at typical points where their overwhelm is experienced, you can start to help the child intervene and reframe that, help them calm themselves, support themselves, know what some of the calming measures are to recenter themselves. Then they can start learning how to do that on their own as they grow.
I like that. And I like also bringing the teachers into the picture.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of things like some kids can do so much better and have so much more endurance in the day if they're allowed to get up and move around a few times.
Right.
There's these little cushions that are about this big and they're all spiky.
Yeah, the squishy
and one side's smooth and one side's spiky.
Yeah.
And they can sit or stand on that. Yeah. And so that helps with vestibular and proprioception because if they need movement, they can kind of like bounce on it or wiggle around.
Right.
They can feel it pushing on them.
Yeah.
And then they're not kicking the kid in front of them, but they're still getting the stimulation and it's calming them down so that then their visual and auditory and other senses that they need for learning
right.
can work more efficiently without the distraction from the other
right.
guys.
And many, many preschools and kindergarten classes and first grade classes have these implemented. They're starting to do it in schools. It's called sensory breaks. And they do that. And I suggest to a lot of teachers, too, that to have sensory breaks before the more difficult. Like if your classroom is having more difficulty with math or reading or something or circle, whatever it is, then have a sensory break right before that one so that they're able to re-alert, re-establish connections to their brain and nervous system and their sensory systems so that they can receive that input much easier and more efficiently. When they can do it more efficiently, they're more apt to participate.
Well, and these kids are smart.
Yes.
Sometimes they're not doing well in school, so people think that maybe they're, you know, not a good student or they're not that smart. But a lot of times they're super, super smart. And they've had to compensate for these issues for years. And so if you can quiet all this background noise down for them, you will be amazed. They're going to be like,
it
just blowing you away with what they can do.
Flourishes and thrives. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so developing, you know, as a country, I think we're working on developing it with occupational therapists too and others about how to create these sensory breaks in older people. I think that's a really underserved population. I know that's where we see that in the young kids, but even in the middle-aged kids, older kids, high school kids, college kids, and adults, even in the workplace, that we need to start, especially those who sit at a desk all day, even at a computer or all the technology we're using right now, you know, taking sensory breaks. And what does that mean? You know, walking, running, twisting, turning, spinning?
Well, as much as people like to be efficient, I've actually had people make their office very inefficient on purpose.
Yeah.
So that they can't reach their printer from their seat.
Yeah.
Or they can't reach their whatever tool they need.
Yeah.
And so they have to get up and walk over and move around.
Right.
And even though it slows them down a little bit, having that movement and that break from just sitting in one position and swiveling back and forth
right.
is really, really good for their body.
Right.
And so overall, mentally, their productivity can go up because they're not going to fatigue out.
It goes up tremendously. And even just taking 5 or 10 minute breaks each hour to go do something is incredibly supportive. And it really does increase your energy and your productivity. I even seen it up to fivefold improvement. And the sleep is improved. And the next day, and your nutrition choices, like a lot of times us grownups may pick afternoon coffee or chocolate or sugar or something to keep us going at that 4 o'clock hour. And so when you're feeling drained at that 4 o'clock hour, know that back that up a little bit and find out where some of your energy drains are. And maybe it's from sensory overwhelm.
I agree.
Yeah.
And another thing, I think, since we're talking about the adults that we can go into a little bit, is if you live a life and you have sensory processing issues and you have this chaotic input in a very hectic life, because most people these days do, at least in our country.
Yeah.
You can see that start to lead to a lot of mental disorders.
Yes.
You can really start to have anxiety, general anxiety disorder, all the other ones that are kind of vague diagnoses.
Absolutely. Or chronic depression. Inflammatory diseases and problems and conditions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously I want to help the kids, but the adults can use the help too,
right.
because we don't want them just staying in this place where their brain is overwhelmed and they're having all these anxiety feelings and uncomfortable being in their self.
Right.
And that leads them to want to have medication to cope, right?
Right.
And then it has side effects and go down that road. So
right.
we want to help them feel supported and give them tools to work on these issues so that they don't need the medication as the support.
Exactly.
To feel wonderful.
Exactly. And energetic. I mean, most people, we don't really talk about it, but we ask, you know, what health outcome would you like? A lot of adults, though, tell me they'd like to feel more energetic. But the kids, we talk about that, they're like, I don't want my child to be more energetic. But actually, if they seem over-energetic, again, that's a hyper-response too. Most kids, I don't, maybe some might want to jump on the furniture, but that because that's kind of fun. But really, most kids don't want to be very hyperactive either and don't want to really be overwhelming in front of everyone. And they want to go with their environment and they want to be with it and enjoy that time too.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So what would everyone enjoy to understand about how that noticing what sensory overwhelm is, but then also noticing that it can really make a whole lifetime difference for their children? What could they know about?
Well, I mean, a huge part of your childhood, I look at it as like two main things outside of your family. So you have social things and friends, because when you're young, like you get to go to all the birthday parties and do all the fun stuff. There's all these field trips. There's all these cool places to explore.
Right.
And if you're very overwhelmed by your environment, you're not going to really be into all of that. You're going to miss out on some of those activities. Or if you're one of those very kids that are all over the place, you might be limited. You might not get invited to certain things, or your parents might not feel comfortable taking you to certain places. And so then you miss out again.
Right.
So that's one aspect. And the other aspect is that we spend our young life in school learning.
Right.
And so if you're spending a majority of your time in school all day feeling overwhelmed and frustrated, you're just not going to feel good about yourself, about what's going on every day, day in and day out. It's going to wear on you.
That's really true.
So I don't think that any parent wants either of those scenarios for their child.
Right.
And so just by getting some help for them and supporting them, you know, someone that can really help get to the causes and give tools to cope while they're going through that process. Absolutely. So that they can manage in between treatments.
Yeah, well, and they have tools to and strategies really to empower, right?
Exactly.
And to build that self-confidence. And we start to unravel many coping mechanisms that we see that we've learned now are rather unhealthy is tuning into the phone or the iPad or the pad tablet, you know, or TV or gaming. And a lot of times when you have children that are preferring that over going outside or doing things, what's happening, maybe fear about society too, but it's really a lot of times it's sensory overwhelm and they're needing shutdown time. They really don't want to go to sleep, but they don't know what else to do with their time. And so take a look and see and explore with the kids. What else could they do with their time that isn't that actually brings and alerts their system back up and improves their energy level rather than continues to have it de-escalate? Yeah.
As you were saying that, I had this thought, and it's a little bit of a side note, but I think it's something we should throw out there. So with a lot of the teens, with sensory processing issues, you might actually see them be super mellow and super laid back, but saying that they feel really anxious a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of test anxiety, worrying about getting something done or worrying a lot about, you know, their appearance, like just being very worrisome all the time, but really mellow.
Yeah.
That's actually a sign of having sensory processing issues.
Absolutely.
And so, again, you have to go back to those issues and work on them, and then the rest of it will clear out.
Yes.
And change. And
yeah.
They can have a more energetic, you know, fun,
right,
pleasant experience in the world.
Right. And start to be that true expression of who they really are and what is it they came to do and experience and share with everyone else.
I think teenagers will always be a little difficult, a little moody, and, you know, take a little bit of patience, but you should be able to recognize that they might be having issues and they're not bouncing off the walls or they're not doing all the things that the younger kids are doing because they've learned to compensate.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you. And we just wanted to share with everyone where you can get, if you have a child or you know someone that has a child that's experiencing, or even an adult that's experiencing sensory overwhelm in these ways, please give us a call or reach us on our website. You can find us. We're here locally in San Diego in Solana Beach, and we'd love to be of support to you. We're at Ocean Wellness, and our number is 858.
I'm sorry. I can't help you.
792-7296. I just remembered it.
Good job.
The lighting is
I cheat and use my phone to help with that, but I don't have it on me
right
now.
We all do that. But you can reach us there, and please look us up. If you have any questions, you can email us. We'd love to help answer your questions. Thank you all, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. For more information on how to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families, visit our website at www.centerforconscious.com. That's www.centerforconscious.com. Join us again next week as we get a little bit more conscious and a little bit more centered, and we'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you.
The Specialty Produce app is the world's number one handheld resource on produce. The app features photographs, recipes, geography and history, taste and culinary applications on over 1,900 produce items. From apples to zapote, we've got your produce questions answered. Our app is available for both iPhone and Android. Download our app for free today.